Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. As always, I want to remind you to go to reallifepharmacology.com and pick up your free 31-page PDF. It's a little study guide I put together on the top 200 drugs. Definitely a good resource if you're out in clinical practice, just a great refresher. Or if you're studying for board exams, things of that nature, it's a nice resource to kind of have and lean on just to pick up some important clinical pearls or re-remember some of the clinical pearls with these medications. So again, reallifepharmacology.com, go snag that free PDF. All right, the drug of the day today is glipizide. Brand name of this medication is Glucotrol. And this medication is used for type 2 diabetes. Going back, thinking about type 2 diabetes and why blood sugars are elevated, that type of thing, insulin is going to play a huge role in lowering blood sugars and helping us get our patients to our A1C goal. Insulin is released from the pancreas, specifically from beta cells. And glipizide actually stimulates the pancreas or beta cells to release that insulin. And obviously, as we get more insulin into the bloodstream, having its effects, we lower blood sugar. Insulin, remember, promotes the storing of glucose essentially in the liver as glycogen. And so that's going to ultimately lower blood sugar. Now, side effects, very, very similar to insulin, okay? Hypoglycemia and weight gain. Those are by far the two things that you're going to want to worry about and monitor for the most. Upon initiation, there have been rare cases of, you know, skin reactions and things like that as well with glipizide. But again, not incredibly common and probably not much more so than any other medication as well. But hypoglycemia, weight gain. And because of those two adverse effects, that's one of the reasons why this class of drug has really fallen out of favor. 10, 15, 20 years ago, these drugs were used all the time, but now we've got a lot of newer agents, SGLT2s, GLP-1s, which are generally better tolerated, and we don't have as much hypoglycemia risk, and we don't have as much weight gain risk, which is always a concern in our type 2 diabetes patients who are often already overweight. Dosing, glipizide is typically going to be dosed once daily. However, as those doses escalate, you will likely see that dose split up, particularly with the immediate release dosage form. There is an extended release dosage form as well, and it's important to note that the administration of those two does differ a little bit. So immediate release is typically 30 minutes before meals, and that's done to kind of help ensure that it's absorbed at a fairly stable or regular rate, because if you give it with food, there have been reports of that absorption being variable and then kind of affecting blood sugars in a variable manner as well. Now, the extended release, giving that one with breakfast is fine, and that's typically how it's done. It's given with meals, and like I said, typically breakfast. So that's an important distinction, I think, to remember between dosage forms is the timing of administration. Now, you may get into situations clinically where, a patient has said, well, I've taken my immediate release, with meals all my life. I've never had an issue. And, that's a situation where you're probably going to have some common sense and clinical judgment and, maybe rely on the patient's history and consistency there. So, use some common sense with that information, that type of thing. But typically, if we're going to start IR or immediate release or extended release in patients, we're going to typically want to try to recommend it as the manufacturer intended there. Let's talk about CKD, which is often a common complication from long-term diabetes. So if we're going to use a sulfonylurea, again, these drugs have definitely fallen out of favor a little bit and aren't used as much. Glipizide is the preferred sulfonylurea in chronic kidney disease. Okay, so medication like gliburide, that's another sulfonylurea. That one's a little bit more concerning about, you know, changes in absorption, or excuse me, elimination and things like that, where the dosages can accumulate a little bit more. So we're still going to want to use caution in patients on glipizide with CKD and maybe monitor them a little bit more closely, particularly if we're changing doses and or there's renal function changes. But glipizide is the preferred agent there. And then, of course, in our geriatric patient population, as patients get older, we're generally going to have less aggressive A1C goals. And so we might do slower titration and or less aggressive dosing with a drug like sulfonylureas, and that's to prevent the negative side of hypoglycemia, or at least lower the risk of hypoglycemia. I do get asked about the sulfa warning. Glipizide is a sulfonylurea, so theoretically, there could be some cross-reactivity with a patient that's had like a Bactrim allergy or an allergy to a sulfonamide antibiotic. This is really quite low, extremely low in the literature as far as the cross-reactivity risk. Now, you're probably going to want to find out at least, you know, what the reaction was. Let's say you've got a Bactrim allergy on the list. Definitely find out what that allergy was, and you know, if it was a minor rash that resolved right away or something, or you know, GI upset, obviously that's probably a situation where it's probably not going to be any higher risk to use a sulfonylurea than it would be to, you know, use any other drug or that type of thing. So again, find out what the reaction was. If they had a situation where they had Steven Johnson syndrome and almost died or something because of an allergic reaction to Bactrim, that's a situation like, okay, well, we might want to do a little bit further digging and, you know, maybe try to figure out another option for their diabetes, or, you know, at least weigh that risk versus benefit of using a sulfonylurea compared to selecting another agent. So kind of use some common sense with that. Obviously, the literature changes over time, so definitely do some digging and that sort of thing if you're considering using glipizide in a patient with a significant sulfa allergy. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we will wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, like pharmacotherapy, ambulatory care, medication therapy management, geriatrics, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. If you're a pharmacy student, we've got links to our NAPLEX content as well, so definitely go check out those resources. If you're a healthcare professional, nurse, med student, or any other professional that has to go through pharmacology courses, that type of thing, we've got a lot of resources, books, case studies, drug interactions, all sorts of different stuff through our Amazon links and as well as our Audible links too. So again, all those links, meded101.com/store, STORE. All right, so let's talk drug interactions a little bit. First and foremost, you know, any diabetes medication is going to potentially increase the risk for hypoglycemia. Okay, that's pretty common sense. You add a diabetes medication that's going to lower blood sugar, and they're taking a sulfonylurea, we could lower that blood sugar further and potentially cause a low blood sugar event. Other medications, quinolone antibiotics, beta blockers, and their potential to maybe mask hypoglycemia, those are all potential medications that could raise the risk for hypoglycemia. And then, of course, I've covered these in other topics as well, but you got to think about meds that raise blood sugar and could potentially oppose the beneficial effects of glipizide. So your corticosteroids, for example, your antipsychotics, you know, olanzapine, clozapine come to mind. Stimulants may raise blood sugars. Some of the transplant medications, cyclosporin, tacrolimus, these are all meds that could raise blood sugars and potentially oppose glipizide's beneficial effects. And then there are some potential CYP interactions. I would not categorize them as very significant, but something to maybe think about. And usually you're probably going to recognize these drugs as having notorious drug interactions. So fluconazole is one that I've seen happen. This is can inhibit CYP2C9 to a certain extent. And in that setting, that could increase the concentration of glipizide. On the flip side, classic enzyme inducer rifampin, that could induce CYP2C9. And that may lower concentrations of glipizide, which subsequently could potentially raise blood sugars. So again, we're going to monitor those patients, you know, watch for hypoglycemia if concentrations are going to go up, you know, watch for hyperglycemia if concentrations of the drug are going to go down. So I think it's important to recognize that. As far as other, you know, drug interactions, not an incredible amount, I would say. Obviously, that's just a quick list of some of the most important ones, in my opinion there. But certainly there is a much longer list if you go look at UpToDate or other resources there. That's about it for glipizide today. I thank you so much for listening. If you got suggestions, comments, definitely don't hesitate to reach out. MedEducation101@gmail.com. Or else you can track me down, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCGP, BCPS, at LinkedIn. Definitely don't hesitate to connect with me there. And leave us a rating review on iTunes if you picked up a clinical pearl or enjoyed this episode today. Also, go ahead, support our sponsor, meded101.com/store. I'm greatly appreciative to all of you who have done that. Again, lots of different options. Books, case studies, study materials, go support our sponsor there and help keep this podcast free and educational for all to enjoy. All right, well, I'm going to sign off. Again, thank you so much for listening. Appreciate you all being here and have a great rest of your day.